Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have a great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science, and, oh, well, we'll see what it's going to lead to. I thought it would be good tonight to talk about a subject that I kind of dealt with in a different way before. It was more of a future-oriented kind of approach. And I thought it would be better, maybe, to talk about how, if the fourth ray becomes enlightened in our world, which means it's a fourth type of energy, which I'll describe in a few minutes, how this would affect the world as it is today and in the very near future, rather than to talk about it 50 years, 100 years hence, and that sort of thing. Trying to look at a more optimistic side of where we could end up out of the mess of things that are going on right now. Now, of course, we have a terrible set of circumstances. You know, one of Japan's reactors completely melted down a few hours ago or whatever. And it's always something that's of great concern, it seems like, that's going awry. And in addition to that incident, then we had, of course, we'll say the unrest, but it's far more than that, the changes in the world that are changing the way the Middle East is functioning and if that's going to be healthy or a good thing or not. The real point is that it's happening more along the outgoing third type of energies that affect more of the, we'll say, the more militant aspects of life and forceful aspects of life than what we're going to get into, which is another way to kind of look at life and to live life, which is using another kind of energy focus, the fourth type of energy focus. And for a lot of you who may not understand that, I'll try to explain this. But the point is that whether you call it a fourth ray, fourth energy, any kind of, it's really a different way of perceiving what life is, and the show is Why Life Is, of course. And beyond that, finding answers that we haven't really been, fully actively searching for and achieving, of course. So this might be a good show for maybe those people who say, well, let's talk about something that might turn out better. How do we move in a direction that's really going to be a better world instead of the world that we're looking at right now, which is not a better world. It's a world that's messed up and has a lot of conflict. And some people are more optimistic, but they're optimistic still using conflicting methods. They're still fighting for their means of change, and they think that that's going to be a solution for them. There's better ways and all that. So let's see if we can get into that. So what do I mean by a fourth type of energy or fourth ray world? What is fourth? What does that mean? Well, there's seven kinds of ways that through energy, God or the creator of our universe expresses itself. That's all I'm talking about. It's just these ways of expression. And in the ways of expression, these are ways that life, which is what I call God's growth, is a means of creation. So it's the way that we can co-create with God and create ourselves. It's a way all life creates more of the universe, and in doing so is a co-creator of God and with God. So doing this kind of thought process, the fourth kind of energy, I'm not going to go through all the types because I don't think that that's a good use of our time tonight. But the fourth type of energy, which is starting to come back into focus on Earth, it's been out since 1675, give or take. And that's a long time, AD, 1675 AD. So it's a long time ago when it went out. And what's been in focus for even longer has been the third type of energy focus. And only four out of seven types of energy are expressed in a world at the same time. So usually when one is going out, of course, another one is coming in to replace that one that's going out. The one that's leaving, and not surprisingly, or maybe surprisingly, in the year around, the center of its leaving is in the year 2012, towards the end of the year. When it's leaving, it tends to become a crisis for humanity because the people who have throat energy chakras that use this energy to sense the world do so with the help of the right focus being in. And so if they're selfish, their inaccuracy and selfishness is not as bad than if the focus of that energy is no longer being helpful. It doesn't correct their sense of communication and speech and, to some extent, communicating together. So it's a back-and-forth situation. And by not having accurate senses, people make terrible mistakes. They get into illusion and become very selfish. And so that's what we're facing right now. That's how the world has gotten to where it is right now, is through this incredible level of selfishness and miscommunication, unwillingness to communicate sometimes, and misuse of the types of things that the third type of energy creates, which one of them is human civilization is dependent greatly upon this type of energy. So civilization could take a big hit because the things that we take for granted in it are becoming more and more difficult to work correctly because our sense is so poor of our own civilization. Okay. So those are the things that we're operating under. The solution using a third ray approach is to use force and power. A lot of times it comes out as military or police actions. Other ways of correcting it is sometimes to use big economic changes, like banking and things like that. So we've got a bunch of things that are not going too good for us as a world. And if we were going to change this around, let's say that instantly, you know, we could all snap our fingers and instantly this fourth type of energy, which will not be completed and coming in for another 13 years from about now, it's going to take a long time in human terms of time, it's really not that long, but for this to take place. And during that time, what we would like to see is the enlightenment of the world through the use of the fourth ray in an enlightening way. What does the fourth ray stand for? What is that? What is that? How does that affect our senses? Well, it affects inner vision. It affects the balance in ourselves between a spiritual life and a material life, which we have to balance. You can't just pursue only a spiritual existence and forget about all material things because we live in a material world right now. Those people who are physically alive don't have that luxury, if you can call it that. They have a responsibility to make the physical world a more spiritual world by balancing it with spiritual thinking and spiritual actions. So here we are in a world that's not doing this, but let's say we could instantly change it and make it with the fourth ray focused already in the world. Then we would just have to use it correctly. Now, if you follow what I said so far, that would mean that our inner vision and the way we contemplate, the way we meditate in all of the operative spiritual ways that we might are the critical elements to providing us with a way out of the mess that we're in right now. So some of this comes from, we might call it meditative planning, and seeking to have a spiritual life that isn't just spiritual, but includes a balance with the material world. And so this means that people will use their material resources in ways that are considerably different than they have been. Now, I realize that some of what I'm saying sounds a little bit out there, so I'm going to try to bring it down to a more, we'll say, concrete level throughout the show and give a lot of examples tonight so that it's much easier to understand than these nebulous conceptual things I'm talking about. So people could say, yeah, I could do that, or other people can do that with me, and that sort of thing. Okay, so let's start about some of the things that are wrong and how we would immediately make some changes in them if we were following this more fourth-ray approach to using our chakras and being able to sense better the inner understandings of things. One of the first things I think is important to recognize is that for the most part, people do not correctly understand the motives of those around them, good, bad, or indifferent. They don't understand these motives, and they oftentimes don't take the effort to gain an understanding of others. So we, as a result of this, make huge mistakes. We elect people to office who are corrupt and manipulative and greedy and selfish, and just out and out lie to us continually from one day to the next sometimes, and just terrible things. We do this. And this is the result of not being aware through the fourth ray center of when a person is really spiritual. Instead, we're attracted by the desire sometimes for us to be and they to be spiritual rather than to correctly sense it. So consequently, we continue to make the same mistakes over again because of that. And these desires to have spiritual life are deep within us. And they come from the fact that part of us really wants to be close to and with our Creator. For most people, this is true. This isn't true for everybody, of course, but it's true for most people. And in facing that reality, we sometimes resort to fantasy because the change is so difficult to get our fourth-ray centers, particularly in our physical body, but in our astral and mental bodies too, to respond correctly to the external energy that's coming into the sense. And the difficulty comes from the interference from our desires and the interference from our faulty thinking, our mental body. So we think wrongly, and we desire most of the time rather than seek to serve and give in a wise way to others. This is a fundamental problem, and it's aggravated at the present time by the third ray going out and the fourth ray trying to come back in, focus, while we have this innate problem. Okay, so what do we do about it? Well, in a fourth ray enlightened world, what people would in general be doing is they would be spending maybe, I'm just making up a time, a half hour, 40 minutes a day, probably at the beginning of the day, to contemplate what kinds of areas of misunderstanding they're going to have, they're going to experience throughout what they think is going to be their day. Now, they, of course, don't know all the things that are going to happen. But it puts them in tune with the areas of bad perception that they already have. And it allows them to make some plans for improving their understanding by pre-planning, pre-understanding the areas they think are likely to occur. It's very difficult for human beings to be able, in the moment of time that they have, to be very aware and therefore even more so conscious. It's that part of life, especially in the physical world, which is caused by the density of the energy, by the way, that this problem occurs. It's this part of life which really is one of the foundations of our difficulties. So people would be spending 30, 40 minutes just right at the beginning of their day concerned about this issue, I know it sounds bizarre. You could say, oh, I would love to have 30 or 40 minutes, but I don't seem ever to have that time to do it. Well, it will become such an important issue that people will do it because they feel compelled to in mass. Not everybody, but possibly the plurality and even the majority of people will do this. If the world were reaching enlightenment along the fourth ring, and if we could snap our fingers and that were going on right now. So how would that play out then? Let's say that we had 45% of the population that did this on a daily basis, but altering with other parts of the population, so isn't the same 45% every day. So you're getting even a wider spread if you spread, you know, if you look at it on a weekly or monthly basis. And now if we examine that, we could say, well, what would happen to the world then? Just this one thing that is such a biggie that I'm talking about right now. What would happen to our world around us? Well, since we would have a better understanding of the motives of others, and we would be looking for a spiritual balance in others to match our own spiritual balance, the people who have the highest level of spiritual balance in themselves will be the ones that are voted in office, are hired on the job, are accepted into various programs, schools, whatever, make the most money, have the most friends, live a life with the greatest number of connections between themselves and their creator, and find life to be most joyful. That's what would happen if we had even that number of people doing this. It would change the world around tremendously. That you can see how that flies in the face of the third ray type of energy as it functions today in a very dark way. The people who you would just substitute, the people today that are in political life or have any kind of power or control are seeking that. They want power and control. They don't care about spiritual anything. And they are devious and cunning and corrupt and dishonest. Ooh. That's quite a difference between these two worlds. And they're the most successful in terms of areas that we would normally think of as potential signs outwardly of success. They have the most money. They seem to have more friends. They seem to have tremendous influence over other people. They get into the news, etc. And they also have tremendous power and control, which is what they seek in life. Whereas those who are under this fourth ray enlightened more position don't seek power. They seek balance and spiritual life connected to and balanced with all elements of material life, including the desire to be creative of more of it. Wow. So that's going to turn things really around if we can make it all take place. And that's just the beginning. It's the very tip of the iceberg, because this show is just started, really. But we're beginning to see that just that one thing would make a big difference. You know, we would have one heck of a different world. That doesn't get rid of all the evil people. It doesn't get rid of all the selfish people. It just makes them far less viable and successful and able to live the way they choose to live. They would be restricted by the nature of the existing circumstances within them in this enlightened world. Here they enjoy continual growth, power, and we'll say the ability to be destructive to the creation of God. Okay, now what other things could we expect to change? That's a biggie right there, I guess, huh? Well, the next thing we would look at is, let's look at the realm of education. I've mentioned some things about education, but I really have always seemed to short-circuit that for some reason. Right now, we measure education, by the ability to score high on tests, to turn in certain kinds of prescribed work, and to be able to spit back facts as knowledge. That's it. That's what education is measured by. All right. But what about in a fourth ray enlightened world? What's education going to be measured by for those people who are responding to that enlightenment? Maybe the 45% or whatever number we might choose. Well, instead of it being based upon how much knowledge somebody has and how accurately they can report it back as this fact or that fact, in this world, it's how you use whatever knowledge you have to create something greater. That's called consciousness. And so that will be the measure of a person's success in receiving and gaining the educated consciousness and mind. Wow, that's going to change things. The idea of standardized testing will be turned on its head. Instead of testing people for standardization, we will test them for creation. And their ability to be creative in virtuous ways will measure their spiritual side, and their ability to be virtuous in material or form-related energy outcomes will be related to their material side. And, of course, in our educational system, we will seek there to be a connection to and balance of the two sides for a person to become successful and matriculating, and beyond that, showing and truly being a result of good education. So it's a totally different kind of place. It's almost like it's an alien world. Now, you could say, well, aren't there some schools that have tried that, but it didn't work, or to do it, and then people go on and they don't really know how to use that and whatever. Not really. There has been some elements, some parts of education, rarely, that focus on these things. But almost always within the construct of the bigger third-ray approach, which it's got to be knowledge, and you still have to be tested, and you got to meet certain levels of proof that you can do this or that. Well, if you think about what I'm suggesting, if you can't rewrite or do arithmetic, you're going to have a very difficult time creating in many fields. And so, functioning as a creative person, tests all these more basic things, but shows how you can use them in ways that are unique and much greater in help, and express more goodness or godly things within themselves. All right. Wow, that's pretty neat. What else about education might be of a value to consider here? Well, freedom of thought. Yes, the fourth ray is not the first ray, so it's not talking about thought just as being free. But it's about open-mindedness. Freedom of thought is not just the ability for one person to express themselves, but it's the ability of all people to ensure that all other people have that ability as well. That's what the fourth ray is going to attempt to bring into education. We don't have that now. Not only do we not have it, it's getting extinguished almost by the day. Generally, we must learn what other people supposedly, who seek power and control, want us to. And if we don't want it in the ways that they expect us to, in the ways that they think, using their principles and standards, we won't pass. Worse than that, the education itself might be entirely denied to us. So we can see there's a tremendous difference here. This whole perspective is like, wow, what a difference. So fourth-ray people that are enlightened are seeking to make sure that everyone else has that ability to follow in their own way that process. yeah, important. They aren't just about creation, which would be a more first-type energy approach or first-ray approach. They want everyone to have the opportunity. Now, that opportunity is not the same as having the same experiences. I don't want you to think this is some kind of socialist panacea. No. The enlightened fourth ray seeks individual expression. As a matter of fact, it's one of the hallmarks. Under the fourth ray, we talk about it as being the ray of artistic expression, which is individual. You see, now I realize that in some cultures, and especially in socialistic type and communistic type of societies, this is reversed. It's not about individual being creative. It's about everybody being the same, or as close as possible. Everybody having the same, because that type of masterization of the fourth type of energy leads to a godless world of materiality. And spirit, the spirit side is gone. It pretends a spiritual position that it doesn't have any of. Okay. So I hope that kind of clarifies what I'm getting at in that respect. We can come back to some other parts of education, and I think we will. But I want to cover some parts of the world and how different they might become, so that we can go even deeper into this whole kind of bringing it together into a total experience. What else would be very different? Well, let's look at things like the technology of the world. Right now, technology, which is a third ray type of, we'll call it expression, is extreme. Some technology is helpful. Most technology today is there for its own sake. There's a lot of technology that is constantly developing that does not lead to a more spiritual existence. It may interfere with such. Computers are a good example of this. Computers can be very helpful because they're supposed to be a tool to provide a service, a number of services, to human beings. They increase our memory storage. They reduce the time it takes for us to do calculations. They can retrieve the same or different facts over and over again with nearly complete accuracy. And they allow us to do certain kinds of complex creations where most of the mathematical and other elements of the creations are behind the scenes, and what we're experiencing is the beauty of simplistic appearance of complicated formulas, usually on screen or sometimes printed out. These are wonderful things that computers can do. But why aren't they doing that so much? Well, the problem with computers is that they were started by mostly selfish people. They've been thriving through mostly selfish reasons in existence. And they fail to address the single most important issue that human beings have, which is the desire to be co-creative with their creator. Well, the computers don't help that much. In fact, they many times hurt it. Because the reason they hurt is because they interfere with creativity. They interfere with it because they don't get to the contemplative issues and to spiritual paradigms. Almost everything that computers deal with are material things and in material ways. So instead of helping us to become more creative, they stifle our creativity by forcing us to function more as a computer ourselves, because the computers don't function nearly anything like a human being. They don't try and help us find an answer. They force us to find the answer the way the computer has been programmed to do so. even the slightest change in a digit or number or any kind of expression can completely fault and prevent the computer from functioning properly. So this is an unforgiving and non-creative thing, even though it took a lot of creativity to initially develop it. It now turns out to be a confinement of human mind and human creative expression if you're trying to use it as an instrument with yourself to be creative. You have to do so much and spend so much time learning computerese and operating it in a specific way that most of the things that would be easier to do creatively are things that would be easier to do without a computer. It's a pretty crazy thing, I know. Now, does that mean that it doesn't still play a grand part in our society? Mostly in information retrieval, yes. Huge, because it's knowledge-based. But almost nothing in helping people to create. Very few people create on or with a computer. There are exceptions. Architects and some draftsmen use computers quite a bit. But when it comes time to really be creative, oftentimes they're sitting here with a pencil and paper, and then they say, well, I have to convert this over to the computer so I can put it in my program. You see, it just ain't the real thing. Okay, so let's try to fix this problem, since I don't like computers because of this. Okay, let's try to fix it. Well, the way to fix it is this. You allow a computer to communicate more with the mind of the person. It doesn't replace our mind, but we control it more from our mind. And we allow the computer some area to become inaccurate, because it's only through making errors and mistakes that a person can afford to be creative. If you're never going to make an error, you're never going to make a mistake, you can never create anything. Well, that's what a computer, by definition, tries to be. It never makes a mistake. It never makes an error. So the computer that I'm discussing in a fourth-ray enlightened world makes mistakes. It has some judgment quotations. It makes decisions not just based upon zeros and ones. It makes decisions based upon how much it changed and grew within the parameter of us using it and how much we created ourselves. It becomes a quasi-life form. Now, it doesn't have a soul, because in order to have a soul, it would have to do this independent of us, and it can't do that. The reason it can't do that is because in order to be a life form, as God chose, computers would have to become alive. And alive has many qualities which are missing from computers because they aren't alive. So anything that's still a machine is got a real problem. It can only reach a little closer, and only with our help can it even come anywhere near being creative. But that little bit will make a difference to us. If it becomes a bit creative, it will be a much more helpful device, because then we can co-create with it, and it with us, and eventually with God. And who knows, maybe through that whole chain of events, eventually computers may become alive. But we've got a long way to go, and it isn't going to be by having stronger CPUs and still using a knowledge-based system that's just about a bunch of facts that's being spit out. That is never going to get the computer to be thinking. We can fool ourselves and program it in ways so cunningly, so it may seem like it is. But for real creativity to exist, there needs to be life. Okay, so let's take another area. So that was a technology thing. But there's a whole bunch of additional technology things, vast number, that we should talk about as we move along. But computers are kind of like a foundation of this system, aren't they? I mean, if we started to discuss cars and how they might help us interact with our environment better, prevent us from getting hurt in accidents, allow us to get more timely to places without traffic jams, et cetera, do all those things, and conserve enormous amounts of energy in comparison to the vehicles of today. those are all things that will require a computer more like the one that I have just described. So they go hand in hand with the advancement in cars or any form of mechanical transportation. Very interesting stuff. So the future would be brighter, lighter, if we had computers and cars that interacted much more with us on an intelligent and conscious level to some degree. Now, does that mean the machines are going to take over and they're going to become more conscious than us? No. We have the advantage in consciousness. They have the advantage in knowledge retrieval and the ability to calculate. Consciousness wins hands down. No problem. None whatsoever. Consciousness is the second part of God's mind. Everything else that computers do, is in the third part and less of God's mind. You can't catch up. There's no catching up. I know some people are worried about that. Computers are going to take over. Well, maybe somebody can make a computer that seems like it can take over. But ultimately, no matter how you devise a system, the consciousness of man will be superior to the computer unless we design it in a very different way. As part of our consciousness, it can't then become destructive to us because consciousness is an expanding good thing, not bad thing. But as a standalone free element to express itself through the knowledge and retrieval of knowledge, that is a computer, that as a computer is in that way, that is a machine that would not even come close to us, but it would also be impossible for it to interact with God or even to consider God. Okay, and why don't we talk about God? Let's talk about what I see as God. But I guess before I do that, I'm looking at my clock. And we are starting to run out of our time for this segment. So what I'm going to do right now is we'll come back and talk some about God and how God is expressed in a light and fourth way world more. And we'll do that in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's hidden meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back, and this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and tonight we're talking about an enlightened fourth-ray world and trying to go into depth about how things could be better and how this all is going to mesh together. So, let me continue on. I was going to talk about how God is treated in the third-ray kind of focused existence. It isn't only the third-ray that's in focus. But the sixth ray, again, is out of focus, so God is treated more like a third ray thing, meaning that the materiality of religion has grown excessively, while the spiritual side of religion has not. Okay, so let's say we can instantly stamp our fingers, that fourth ray's back in, and it's working like a charm. Everybody is becoming more virtuous and using the fourth ray energy as it was supposed to be. Well, that's a great outcome. Let's hope it happens. And as far as God is concerned, right now, in a third-ray approach, God has become one of money. That's real third-ray. And how big of a kind of institution many places have, how many people they have coming to them, how many people they reach, you know, if they're like a broadcast ministry or whatever. So it's kind of like... it's kind of like all the problems of the third ray just coming out through what many people call God, but it's really religion. Now, what's so different then in that, in comparing that expression to what would happen when we absorb God more through a fourth ray focus? Well, the first thing is that the material representation of religion becomes much less. Now it's going to be balanced by how much does the religion support a spiritual approach that is in concert with our thought and belief system. And that will be the future world. People won't be part of a religion just because it's big or because their parents were or their neighbors are. Or they'll do it because the religion is in concert with their feelings spiritually and their thoughts spiritually. And their expression of it spiritually, and the religion wants to express it to them in a spiritual way. People will be much more concerned about spiritual service rather than spiritual, we'll say, receiving something, even salvation. Now, I know that's a big thing for some people, but why is salvation so much of a quandary then? Well, salvation has to do with usually, overcoming one's problems and selfishness through some faith-based issue between you and God, sort of like a covenant. It's the new kind of covenant. The old kind of covenant, if we talk about Judaic religious beliefs, was more about the fear and honoring of God. Now it's about the salvation side and the loving of God. Well, the loving from God, I should say. Those are the things that become the principles that present-day religions more than not express. I'm not just talking about Christianity now. This is true in other religions as well, even some ancient ones and some newer. So it's a pretty common, relevant issue. And one of the slips of the tongue I gave there is the correct way to do it. It's not how much God loves you. It's how much you love God. And that turns things really, again, on the upside down side compared to the third ray focus of God and religion. If our relationship is with God is by how much we love God, and how much we love God is by how much we understand and co-create with God, which is my definition, then that's a real different world that we're in. And that's the world I believe that the enlightened fourth ray produces. It produces that kind of place. Now, if that's the place you would sign up for, well, come along with me because that's where I want to go to. You see, it's a world where our Creator is known by us instead of, well, you can never know it or never know Him because He's so incredible. Well, no. God didn't create a universe that can't be known. God created a universe that can only be known by co-creation, you see. And in addition, why do we want to love God? I mean, does God need our love? Maybe. I don't know. But God seeks our love, wants us to love it, because it grows our consciousness and allows us to find a much more meaningful life. Why life is, huh? A much more meaningful life, one that changes why and how we exist. So it's not some kind of narcissistic way of existing for God to say, well, I'd like you all to love me. No, it's about the love of us to our Creator reflects back in us as the joy of life and meaning of life. And the same is true of all those that we love who also are loving their Creator because they're loving their Creator. That's the reason people will join together as groups in religion in a fourth-rate world. It's to experience the oneness together of co-creating with their Creator and helping each other to do it. What a different kind of place we're talking about. Okay. So you can see the God of the world that I'm discussing is so profoundly different than the God that is usually represented in the present-day sense. That has a real big change on people. It makes things into a kind of, we'll say, not panacea, but cornucopia of ideas and, we'll say, intermingling of creations between people. Because each person is trying to help others to become more creative of God. What an amazingly great way to see religion. I realize you say, well, I don't see that going on when I go to church. Well, that's right. Is it still okay to have charity then? Is it okay to have compassion and live in a environment and seek there to be a sense of love for all? Sure. That's not incompatible with God at all. As long as it doesn't express the negative side of form. The negative side of form is churches exist because they need to get more money or more power and control. Or to have the belief in their way of seeing God as the supreme way and only way, and all the other ways are just nonsense. Wow. If you believe in creation, you believe in the Creator has a zillion, infinite zillion number of faces and responses to people. It's not one central kind of monolithic thing. It is to people what they need it to be while they're co-creating with it. That doesn't mean that it's bad things. It doesn't mean that it's hostile to life or humans. It just means that its form of love is to be open-minded and expressive of individuality, and it seeks to have creativity from others rather than blind allegiance and some kind of giving yourself asunder to its will. God's will is to give others free will. Let me repeat that. God's will is to ensure that make sure that others have free will. Not that it chooses what will people exercise, but people have the freedom to exercise is the key. All right. That's a lot different. Yeah. I mean, I could imagine some people right now are kind of scratching their heads and saying, well, that kind of makes sense, but that isn't what I experience when I'm part of my religious list or that. Well, find a different one or make one of your own. You don't have to stay in some religious place, some God supposedly place, when you find a better way, as you see the light move towards it. You don't have to try to destroy the darkness. It'll destroy itself if it is darkness. But you can move on. And you can allow yourself to become a greater part of this fourth ray enlightened world. Sounding better and better? I hope it is. I sincerely hope that this is starting to make some sense. Could it happen tomorrow? Still might take, like I said, 15 years, 10 to 15 years for this to come about, if it's going to ever happen. Or it might take centuries. It's up to us. But I know what it should be, in my mind anyway. And you may have a different thought or opinion. Of course, you can call in and talk to me about it. But this is the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to paint a picture of a world that maybe a lot of you out there would rather exist in. Well, guess what? It's up to us to create it. And we don't have to fight with everything around us to get there. If enough people, I said maybe 40, 45% or so, choose to create this, the world will change. Yes. It won't change because of the, whatever, 13th monkey or whatever. It will change because the force of God is to eliminate forces between people. So God's energies, God's exercise of itself, breaks down the horrific things that presently are being done in illusion and that are highly destructive to life, people, this world. Okay, so we have these opportunities, and I hope we will move in that direction as far as God is concerned. Now let me move it into another element, another place. We hear so much these days about the future is going to be green, it's going to be meaning conservation, and it's going to be economical, and we're going to not have much pollution or waste, and it will be just this highly efficient sorts of existence. Well, I know a lot of people are going to not like to hear this, but I want you to know that that is not an expression of the fourth ray, as I understand it. It's still an expression of a desire. Remember I talked about the fantasy part at the beginning of the show? To be like the fourth ray, but still working through the third ray or third way of expressing energy. It's not the real expression of the fourth ray. Now, what's wrong with it, first of all, if you want to do all those things? I really have my windmills and coal-fired plants and everything. Well, what's wrong is that it is hypocritical, and it seeks these answers for its own sake. People who are expressive of it through their desire system rather than through their own creative methods will conserve in ways that make little or no difference and sometimes are even harmful for others. I know that sounds strange. But that's what happens when you work out of desire than out of clear thought and consciousness. The more conscious element of conservation is that it continually grows more for those who are still selfish, even though it may do so to some extent for those who are not. In other words, it provides a balance to the system of selfishness. But most people who live their lives conservation-minded live in an egocentric world where they don't care about what they're doing as far as affecting others, and they're doing it for a hypocritical self-edification principle of wanting to seem like, in a hypocritical way, they're really very spiritual because they are doing these things. They want to be identified in some special way as living in an earth house or going to work in a Prius or who knows what else. Those things don't make they do not make a person more spiritual, and they don't get through the interference of the third rate. They happen to be very material outcomes. The better solutions for these things is, if you can, create more and more conserving things, but even better than that, work in conservation in ways that aren't so necessarily glamorous, but provide tremendous amounts of resource for others because you're using so much less. And you can say, well, but then I'm just doing it for everybody else. Well, yeah, that's the idea, right? So use half the energy, not because you just want to save money and look like you're a great conservationist, but use half the energy because it permits more people to have energy who might not be very conservation-minded, which is difficult for people to swallow. Usually the people who are living the green existence are fairly wealthy, and the people who are not are fairly poor. Which means that living in a green existence today is not very economical because it costs a lot to do it. How do we make it more economical? By being far more creative than our present methods. Yes, you can buy new light bulbs if you think it will save some energy. But the most important thing is to find ways of conserving by spending the least amount of money with the least amount of energy expended and get the most amount of accomplishment and help others do the same. Now you're in the right ballpark. So these kinds of things fool us. We live in a world where, again, we just constantly are in illusion about what is really going on around us. Another element of this same subject, I'm going to take a little break here in a minute because I'm throwing a lot of things at you. But another element about this is the idea that we can make the same amount of power that we seem to desire and crave to have through windmills and wind turbines, and possibly hydroelectric power, and solar. Well, I recognize, by the way, that wind power is solar. Those things make a fraction of a very small amount of the amount of power we use, and yet we ignore the other things that are more important. The most important thing right now is to make energy as cheaply and economically as possible. Why? Because as we build up a wealthier world, it's easier for all people to live a more green life. If we keep people poor because the price of gasoline is going to $8 a gallon or something, nobody's going to be able to buy any kind of energy-saving device. They'll be lucky to pay their rent at all. Or their mortgage at all. They'll be lucky to be able to go anyplace because they can't afford the gasoline or whatever else. And no, it isn't magically going to change because that's our desire. See how that desire problem gets in there? It's going to take 20, 30 years to change those things. Yes, the earth might get a little warmer. Maybe there'll be a little more pollution. But the thing that we have to that challenges us right now is to become prosperous but not greedy, to become more knowledgeable but far more intelligent and knowledgeable, but even more so, far more conscious and more loving in a universal sense. These are the things that are going to make the difference. So you can see what I'm suggesting here is that, again, we turn things upside down. The near time, the next 10, 20 years, but maybe even tomorrow, fourth ray enlightenment world, is one that uses what we have to the maximum effectiveness in a very economical way, not one that is based upon our desires and fantasies, and that almost excludes everybody from contributing in some way to conservation. Wow. Very different idea, isn't it? I know. For a lot of people, it goes against the grain. They say, well, I don't care how much it costs. I don't care whatever. I don't want people using oil. I don't want people using gas. I don't want people using, natural gas. I don't want people using nuclear. Okay. Fine. But then we all go back to riding bicycles. And I don't know where the bicycles get made, because the power to make the bicycles, especially if they have metals like aluminum in them, that ain't going to work. Aluminum's high, high energy demands. Separate the bauxite and to get aluminum, it's almost this huge amount of energy. That's why aluminum's expensive. It's because of the processing to get it. The energy is high. Okay, so what are we going to do? We're going to continue down that fantasy course, or we're going to look at things in ways that are more godlike? I'm saying God is economical. God is first economical and helps people to prosper before they are going to go, super insulate their houses and change their cars to hybrids or to electric or whatever. This is, these things, a $45,000 electric automobile that goes 100 miles is virtually useless in today's world, whereas a $10,000 automobile that maybe uses a frugal amount of gasoline and doesn't cost an arm and leg to upkeep makes much more sense. Yeah. You say, well, I can afford it. Well, maybe you think you can. But you should use that money to help others to find higher consciousness and to find a spiritual life balance in themselves rather than you only paying attention to your own life. That's what I suggest. Let's take a little break for right now. We'll come back to the subject. All right. I say a lot of controversial things here. But I do believe very strongly in conservation. I've been involved in it for a long time, but only from a different, more, we'll say, larger view. All right, let me talk to you about Fai Chi Jizik. I had some pain last night. This is the truth. And mostly my shoulder, a little in my back. From doing things and from living, because I went to the bottle of 5-Chi Jizik and I took some Jizik. I was surprised, first of all, how fast it worked. I forgot. It took about 30 minutes, I can already notice its effect. What was its effect? Did I get spacey, tired, kind of lethargic? No. The pain went away. That's what happened. And I relaxed. I relax because the pain went away. Now, some people can't relax once they have pain, and that's more difficult. Then they need more than just an analgesic. They may need some kind of relaxation kind of thing, whatever that might be, massage. Or sometimes they have to take a tranquilizer or a relaxing kind of agent different from an analgesic. The 5-Chi Jizik still, just amazing stuff. Just took the pain away. It just dissolved is the best way to describe it. I watched it and felt it happen over a couple of minutes of time. Once it started happening, it just, boom. lasted about 7 hours in my particular case, and I took a few more. And that kind of finished it off, and I was good to go. Actually, it lasted until I woke up, which is like about 7 hours or so. So this is the kind of thing you can expect for this. Now, does it work on all pain? No. Does it work on the most severe of all pains? No. It will work somewhat with some people. This last week, we had one fellow who got a bottle over at one of the local health food stores. We've done a lot of sales there. We commend them for helping us and vice versa. But he was one of the few people, it just didn't help. What was his case like? Well, he'd had chronic severe back pain since he left the military. I guess he got it while in the military, possibly through some trauma of some sort. Don't know him that well, I just heard about it. And the result is that for 20 years, he's had constant back pain, chronic. And he took the G-Zyc a few times for about a day and a half, 2 days. And we did tell him to take a lot to see maybe if he could break through, but it just didn't work for him. Now, why would that be? Well, I don't know if he did take any drugs before. He said he doesn't take any drugs for it now, any pain stuff. Maybe he did before. That could only make it worse, but I'll explain why. The energies that signal us that are pain energies are called devonic energies. They're kind of like smart energies, energies that have some level of consciousness. And know the difference between when something's going right or something's going wrong around them. When something's going wrong, they send a signal we call pain. It's to annoy us and sometimes to make us pay attention because they're telling us something that is serious. There's something not going right in their neck of the woods. These energies, though, have a propensity towards, we'll say, repetition. The more often they're stimulated to send the message that things aren't right, the more intense they do, and the harder it is to get them to stop sending the message. If they're doing it for years, 20 years, to turn them off might take months. That's the problem. That's why Jesus didn't work in 2 days. Now, I don't know that it's easy for someone to accept that. And I'm not sure that you could convince anybody to try that. So for some people, you can say that G-Zyc just is not going to work. It just won't. Because their expectations of what they want for relief, which are not unheard of and they shouldn't be denied, are beyond what you can get with something that works only on the divinic energies, or mostly on the divinic energies. And it's not a drug. It isn't a narcotic which shuts down the divinic energies. That's what the drugs do. Now, the reason you don't want to use drugs is because every time you shut down these divinic energies and they just stop sending their signal, because they go, oh, I'm too drunk to send a signal. But every time they're in that condition, when they come out of it, they're even more emphatic because they have a certain level of, we'll call it, responsibility to let us know. And because the third ray is so strong right now, they communicate at a high-pitched level. Pains are much more noticeable today than they were to people 100 years ago or 500 years ago. I know that sounds ridiculous, but if we could actually track such a thing, I think we would see it's true. Even our divinic energies are influenced by the third ray. And so we have become more pain intolerant, which is one of the reasons we chose to make 5-Qi G-Zyc, because a lot of people have a lot of pains. But as it stands alone right now, it's only good for moderate to severe pain. Severe to extreme pain, it's only somewhat effective on some people for. Yes, you can take it with certain relaxation drugs and other things that, you know, relax muscles and stuff, and sometimes get better results. And sometimes you can take a lot more than what we say on the bottle. But then you need to be under the care of someone who can prescribe and someone who can say, yeah, you can take this at this level and it may work for you. You should try it. Be aware. Not everybody, not even close to everybody, responds to any kind of analgesic the same way, the same amount. And there's massive numbers of people that get no relief from many kinds of analgesics, drugs, drug analgesics. So the fact that 5-TG-ZIC might work on 9 out of 10 people, or better than that, maybe 95% of people try, that's a pretty good number. And if you're thinking about trying it, remember, in the same story that I was just telling you about, we told that guy, go right back to the store and get your money back. Because we replaced the product with the store, so everybody's happy. And, you know, it's just part of the process of life that each of us have some uniqueness about us. That uniqueness means that no one thing is going to work for everybody all the time. But 5-TG-ZIC works as much as anything for as many people as I have ever seen, and does so in a way which is pristine. It doesn't make you feel drugged. You don't notice that you've taken something as much as you just notice the pain goes away. And let me tell you, if you take some 5-TG-ZIC and it gives you some relief, then you usually can take more and it'll work even better. And if you take it for several doses or several, they call it, several amounts at a time, then serving sizes, that's what I couldn't think of, several serving sizes, servings, then it will usually work even better over time because you're improving the way the divinic energies are working in your body. And you could say, well, that's not FDA approved, is it? The FDA, are you kidding? No, they have no understanding that I know of all divinic energies. So what I'm talking about is a spiritual thing. This is not medical information. It's spiritual. All right, so you might give it a shot, might give it a try. If you need to get some, buygzik.com. Buygzik, one word, .com. Or 602-431-5762. That's 602-431-5762. And order some. Okay, so let's go back to what we were discussing. What other ways can the fourth ray enlighten and maybe change our world around to make it a better place? Well, let's look at it from the standpoint of the sciences. Right now, one of the big problems with science is that it's very strongly coupled with the third ray, which is technology. Science is a fifth type of energy, whereas technology is the third, but they kind of go hand in hand many times. The third ray, when it is coupled to the fifth ray, makes scientists very egotistical, arrogant, and unfortunately less conscious but more knowledge-oriented. They seek to get patents. They seek to want to prove something always in terms of lower mind knowledge and information. They want to win Nobel Prizes and become in some way important. Look, appreciated is much more important than being important. So if anybody appreciates and is grateful to you, that's a wonderful thing. Being popular or being famous is no big deal. The science of today comes from the fact The scientists of today come from the fact that the third ray is so strong that they don't do science mostly for the sake of gaining understanding. They do it for the sake of a material outcome. If you can't produce something in science, you usually don't have a job. And you're sitting in your backyard or in your garage or basement trying to make something that nobody else knows about or maybe cares about. That's a terrible condition, but it's the result of the extension of our present society as it is, with the third ray so strongly entrenched. Communication becomes very difficult with scientists, between scientists, because of this. They call it peer review, but what it really is peer terrorism and destruction of other people's creations. Someone comes up with a new idea or new thought, and immediately they're attacked by 50 gazillion other people who think they know better, even though they never came up with that idea themselves. The whole thing is ludicrous. Instead of peer review, it should be peer support. Yes, we should challenge the person's ideas to make sure that they aren't some goofy thing that they went off into la-la land on, but respect that they may be right first and be humble and see if we can replicate before we come out with attacks and severe problems that may be presented against a scientist or group of scientists. There's nothing wrong with retesting. There's nothing wrong with trying to show that you're cooperatively challenging their accuracy and see if it's true. That's okay. But that isn't what usually happens. These days, people say, well, that can't be true because... And then they invent all their other nonsense reasons why they never discovered it in the first place. And then it takes 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years or more before some great ideas that are absolutely truthful become generally known and accepted. That's no good. Peer review in the fourth-rate world that's enlightened is done in the most giving of ways. It's done to make sure that your fellow scientist or sister scientist is accurate in their understanding so that they can go on and continue to create even more. It's done for their benefit. And it's done for your own, because if it's true, you want it to be known to be true as soon as possible so that you can use it and other people can use it to build upon even further. Because that's how the whole system was supposed to work. And in the fourth-rate world, that's how it works. People help other people to disseminate their information instead of trying to block it. They help others to prove their experiment instead of to try to disprove it through usually nonsense reasoning methods and attacks that are untrue. The character of a person has nothing to do with their scientific expression. If you don't like somebody, you can tell them you don't like them. You can even print it. But if they print the truth about an experiment or the truth about a device or invention, you say, you know what? I don't like this person, but their invention works great. It's terrific. That's how you do it. Maybe you also find some ways to like that person. Who knows? So you see, in the fourth-ray enlightened world, science doesn't go away. It becomes an expression of God by revealing God through math and truth and experimentation that is objective as much as possible, and allows others to make query and challenge with their experiments, but not to be condemning or destructive or in some way degrading just because you're challenged by it, you disagree with it, you don't think they can know more than you or whatever the story might be. Because those things just don't plain just don't count. Yeah, I know. Wouldn't it be great if the world were really like that? Well, I'm telling you, we're headed either in that direction or some very, very bad nightmare. And I'm going for the good stuff. That's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I'm working for. I know things don't look like this right now. I'm well aware of the world that I'm describing. It's very far from the world that we're living in. But we're not that far if we really get together and try to create this world, to make it right. If you know people who are doing some of the negative things that I'm talking about, let them know about it. And say, hey, you know, there's another way to look at that. You could be a co-creator with God. You don't have to be a jerk. That's the way it can be. Let them know about this show. Have them listen to some of the other shows, including this one. Maybe it'll help them. Maybe it'll change who they are and what they're doing. So we can get on with creating a more enlightened world. So let's talk about some other factors that might come into play. I'll stay with science for a minute. One of the elements of science is to ultimately discover proof of God. How do you like that? That's what I believe science is here for. Here's the problem. Most scientists don't believe there is a God. Yeah. Now, there's a strong minority, I think, that do, but they kind of keep it down and low. You know. Right now, today, scientists in the majority do not believe there's God. And I'm saying this based upon polls and statistics, not just based upon feelings. So, okay, so let's say that's true. What are we going to do about that? Well, here's the point. Why not challenge the scientists who say they don't believe in God with trying to either prove that God doesn't exist, or does, or could, or maybe should? You see, one of the things that troubles me in today's world is this overwhelming lack of, we'll say, open-minded communication between people. If you're going to be accepted into the scientific community in many parts of the country, not everywhere, you've got to have this kind of belief structure that there can't be a God because evolution took care of everything and we don't need one. And there can't be a God because this, this, and this prove it. If God's all powerful and all good, then how come there's evil? Or they use some other crazy logic systems. Those are all wrong, by the way. But here is their problem. Their problem is that they are forced into this position because of a lack of open-mindedness due to a lack of open communication. Each one is so egotistical that this type of attitude about God grows like a weed, because they don't want to think that others might be okay and they're not, even though they think differently. And they think that it's non-scientific to believe in God. But that's where things change in the fourth ray enlightened world. In the fourth ray enlightened world, people are enlightened enough and sense God enough to know that God absolutely positively exists. And if scientists aren't finding that to be true in their quarter, then they may have trouble with their senses and how they're functioning. But they still allow the scientists to have that, because that's freedom of thought, freedom of will. But nonetheless, what we need in terms of dealing with this God question in scientists is some real challenging questions and factual understandings at a level of someone who understands scientists, or some people who do, that can actually have a discussion with them that challenges where their closed-mindedness exists at. Let me give you an example of that. Let's say you're dealing with an evolutionist who says, I'm an evolutionary biologist. I believe strongly in the human genome and understanding genes in general and recognizing that everything is structured based upon these chromosomes and genes and DNA that makes them up. And that's what life is about. You say, well, okay, that's fine. So a bunch of chemicals got together, started square dancing with each other, and before long, they were planning trips to the moon and looking for ways to build closer ties with a thing that doesn't really exist called God. And at the same time, they gained a love for all different parts of nature, and they believe that those different parts of nature are expressions of this thing called God. How come evolution produced that result? Seems very strange. So you can say, well, they might say, it's because we're just unable to intelligently recognize the biochemistry at its most basic level. And that proves even further our position. And of course, you look at it and you say, well, there is some problem with this. Because you see, there's no consciousness explanation. You can't explain what consciousness is, or where it comes from. And further, you think it's the brain, but it isn't, because there's many experiments to prove otherwise. And then in addition, when we look at the question of where did everything come from, we also have to say why. Life is not just it's also a question of why. Like this show is, why life is. So ultimately, the why becomes the message of getting open in mind. Evolution, factually, is unsupported in science by the facts that are found. We have not found the missing link for humans. And even if we could, there would not have been enough time for human beings to have developed in the time span that they did. There's a lot of other issues in terms of animals besides humans and some plants that show that genetics would take too long, way too long, to reach the levels that, in some cases, were achieved. In other words, it's mathematically not likely or maybe even impossible that things, or near impossible, that things happen the way they happen. There seems to be a mind that is behind life and evolution. But evolution seems to be the method that the mind uses so that the mind doesn't directly control the results. It gives a buffer for free will and free choice, choice being part of will. Will is just a consistency of choices. And it allows us to take place so that there can be freedom in life. Evolution is necessary. It provides this vehicle. It's part of God's thought. So you come into that realm and you start looking at it from all those different facts. There's a lot more I haven't included. And you start seeing that, you know what? None of this is really showing anything other than that people who believe only in evolution are in some ways having trouble in themselves about being closer to their creator and other factors. Now, I'm not trying to disparage people about this. I'm just saying that that's what's really going on inside them, in my opinion. The focus is too much on the material existence of things, and they can't see, they can't use the fourth ray part of themselves. They're just blind to it. They can't see that there's great, great beauty and amazing, amazing, beyond coincidence, an amazing array of how things just fit together. Evolution should really end in chaos. It's not a method of organization. Most people don't realize that. Evolution without God is cancer and some types of viruses and other types of pestilence and destruction of life. That's some parts of what evolution is without God. In a purely evolutionary sense, cancer cells are far more efficient in some way than our normal cells. Yet, they're totally inefficient at being creative in anything other than themselves. But creation of only yourself and nothing else is a nullification of creation. It slows down and eventually stops creation if all things did that. Just the way cancer eventually kills you. That's why. It ends life. It's non-creative. Very interesting stuff. Okay, so let's move away from some of the scientific elements that I maybe belabored a little too long on. And let's look at the concept of there being a policy-generated type of society. In other words, we're talking about politics. We're talking about the ability to create in society, in the way people relate to each other, a system that helps the people to collectively, as a force together, achieve better results than they would alone in any endeavor. We call that government. But in this case, we're talking about it from a creative side. At the present time, government does the opposite. At the present time, under the third ray development, as it is reaching its peak, government has become more and more an instrument of destruction. It prevents people from being creative. It prevents people from sometimes even being able to do anything. And it prevents people sometimes from surviving. Government has become a very terrible thing because it's the opposite of what it's supposed to be. Then what is the government of the future? How does it fit in? And let's assume it was here today. Well, the government of the future here today, along the fourth ray in an enlightened world, would be a government where the individual expresses him or herself and does so in a way in which there is complete revelation, appearance, openness of their expression, from their vote to ultimately all the information they have and understanding they have about those that are going to help carry out some of the governmental plans. And at the same time, of the, we'll say, development of whatever plans the government might have. So really, if we look at this from the standpoint of what's today and what's not, we have almost no control in the United States over our government as it presently is. Why not? Because it doesn't any longer, if it ever did, it doesn't any longer represent the will of the people. Instead, it represents the will of special interest groups through corruption and large amounts of money and power and intimidation. And it also represents the need and desire for those in the government to have the power and control over the vast majority of others. Well, this wasn't the design. The original design of our government was to limit it. How did it move from a limited form, which is the only kind of government that actually, according to our founders, has any chance of serving humanity? How did it go from that to this megalithic type of government that respects and cares not any for those that it is supposedly trying to, in a limited way, provide a collective service to, and to create more possibilities and more opportunities to the public? Well, government moved from presenting opportunities to forcing people to do things in a certain way. Control. Government became an expression of the personalities of relatively dark people who did it because they wanted more material goods, more money, greed, more corruption. And the power side of it was probably as intoxicating as the money side. Okay, so in the fourth ray world of enlightenment, governments are highly restricted. The first thing that comes to mind here would be term limits. I realize that the founders didn't want to use term limits because they thought the democratic methods that were being employed would be good enough to keep people from getting reelected if they didn't do a good job. They didn't understand the level to which corruption and greed can make a system so it is intolerant to the wills of others. It virtually eliminates anybody from running, first of all, who doesn't have the same attitude about power and corruption and control. Then it further makes sure that the individual vote of people is contaminated and controlled by a lack of knowledge and understanding, mostly understanding, about who a candidate might be and is willing to do certain things or not. And also, it tremendously contradicts all of the, we'll say, virtuous things that make a person even desirable to be a representative of the people in some respects. Term limits. Term limits prevent some of this from happening by preventing the ability of someone to gain cronyism and the ability to control other people, which is needed, which one of the things that is needed to do that is time. If you don't have enough time because your office is limited in time, it's going to be very difficult to achieve that result. The most corrupt people are the ones that have been there the longest on average. That's the way it is. So you got to get rid of them, and then you got to change the law so they can't keep coming back. Okay, what else can be done in the fourth rate society? That's assuming the first thing is that there are term limits on all offices. And the next step is to limit the range of what government is to do within the lives of the people. We need a review, if you want to call it that, of what the purpose of government is. Is the purpose of government to take care of everybody and make sure that people have a minimum standard of living? Or is the purpose of government to ensure the collective good that people can express through a collective creative effort, such as building highways? And making it possible for the people to defend themselves against outside governments and people. Making it possible for them to ensure that certain kinds of things which are too costly and too big for any smaller group of people to do can be done by the collective whole in general. Now that starts making sense. Anything that doesn't achieve those goals is removed from government. That's the way it is. It would mean cutting our present government down by about 3/4. I'm talking about our federal government, but state governments could probably fall into the same category. Maybe they'll go down by 2/3 or something. And when I say cut it down, I'm just meaning you don't need to have all these segments of government because each one is in itself limiting freedom and preventing people from being creative. Government is much more the problem than it is the solution in today's world. Wow. So we have to put the control back into the people's hands, probably the need for change in a few constitutional amendments, maybe 3 or 4, and the need for a change in the way that we build government itself. The first and foremost choice on anything that is government should be limitation. And how much does it take away the freedom and rights of people? Because there's no such thing as governing others that doesn't remove their rights and freedom. No. In the fourth ray world, the governments are exactly the way I'm describing. They are extremely limited. They do not try to gain equality in the sense of material goods and services for all people. They guarantee the opportunity to do so for all people. But they don't, at least all people who aren't incarcerated or have some other kind of problem with their problem life, let's say. But in general, we're talking about people who aren't in such extreme cases, we give them the opportunity to be creative. We encourage it. We expand upon it. That's why you want independent small businesses, because they are the most creative. You want to make sure monopolies don't exist, so that capitalism can actually thrive. Not because it doesn't hurt capitalism. It's the only thing that, in the long run, retains it. You do not have a welfare system that does anything other than provide temporary help for people, and the help is dependent upon them being helpful themselves, and also there's this auxiliary, we'll say, charity system that comes from private citizens. So ultimately, welfare is not what it is today, or has been at some times in the past, a albatross around people who are disadvantaged and poor, keeping them in that position forever. Why? Because they don't use their creativity to change if you just keep giving them a handout. They become victims of your system. It's cruel. It's government at its worst. And it's the opposite of limited government. Wow. Well, what about people who are disadvantaged, that have several problems, like some disabilities? Shouldn't we do something that would be of help for them? Yeah, in a fourth-rate world, those people are given extraordinary assistance. But they are dealt with as individuals, not in a system. You walk into your quote-unquote welfare office, and the first thing they say is, what did you create this week? How are you getting along with your creator? How are you getting along with others? How much do you serve anybody else besides yourself? You used your check, your welfare check from last month, in what way? How much of it went for creating something good in the world? That determines whether you get any more. Tell me that isn't a different system. One which may shock our listeners. Right, I know. It depends where you live. Maybe it won't shock you if you live where I live, but if you live in maybe New York or California in some parts, it may be shocking. I understand. And for people who are receiving long-term welfare issues, it may be a big, bitter pill for them to hear this sort of thing. Well, I got kicked down again, and I lost my job last year because of the recession and whatever. But now you want to take everything away. No, you don't want to take everything away. I want to make sure you're doing the most creative thing you can in your life to help yourself, your friends, your family, but also the strangers of the world. You have to do all those things. A balance is what I ask for. Because I don't want to give my money to someone to make them dependent and more selfish. I want to make them into a soul and to live the life of a soul, not the life of someone who has been destroyed because of a system that is so stupid they can't understand the most basic things about economy and human nature. Why can't we have communism? Why can't everybody just get whatever they need? Not necessarily what they want, but at least get all their needs met. Well, that's great. But for some people, if you meet all their needs, their need to be creative and gone can be destroyed. You can meet some particularly dire needs on some occasions. That's compassionate, it's humane, and it shows the proper use of charity. But it's unwise to meet all of a person's needs because they're basic needs, because then it disables them. They think their needs are more important than the needs of others. Their needs are what life is about, and getting them met is what it's about. And then, of course, they'll vote for parties who do that and politicians who give them that. But it's just terrible, terrible corruption. So, in our fourth-rate world, we have a totally different system of government. To some extent, It's the original one, the one 200 years ago that was first developed and seemingly was almost immediately short-circuited and has reached a very distant place today. I suggest a very, very limited form of government, one that truly is for and by the people, with limited forms of service, reduce the salaries of people, and make sure that others cannot buy influence or somehow change the will of the people in general. This is the way the government should be. And this would be the way of government in a fourth-rate society. It would be balanced spiritually as well. The idea that there would not be a spiritual side to politicians is just nonsense. It's just about anything else that I've said. But it would be up to the people to decide that, because those people would be in tune with their nature of understanding whether or not their politicians are spiritual and balanced with material needs and goals, and whether their politicians are honest, forthright, open, and creative. Creative to find ways that, as a collective unit, government can be of service. Makes sense? I hope so. Okay, let me go into one last area. If I hopefully have some time here, looking at my clock. Okay, we talked very, very briefly about business. Why are small businesses so important, and why is the ability for people to create a business so important, if that's what they want to do? Businesses are an extension of self. They're ways that people use their creative nature to formulate a means of producing both income and the satisfaction of something else. Something else can be a service or a product. It can be a means of communication and exchange, but it is a business. And these two things can get wed together. The thing that's so magical about some businesses, a lot of them actually, that are small businesses, is that they provide so many of the elements of what the fourth-ray nature is about. It's about spirit being wed with materiality. It's about people getting material things, creating more of them with them, and producing material things like money, while they enjoy and become a greater participant in producing a more efficient, a better product, better way of doing something, whatever, for all. They become a model of the idea of self-creation, which is what God's principles employ. And that's what's so wonderful about small businesses, is they're highly self-creative, while they also, if they're ethical and honest and really care about those that they employ and that they sell things to, etc., are enlightened. So the small business of the future, or if they were here today, would be those businesses that really want to produce things that make a difference in people's lives, to help people become more spiritual and better, more efficient and better in material senses as well. Yes, maybe more well as well. Small businesses could include, if they weren't so restricted by government, things that deal with health. But right now, the government controls health along with people who claim to be health providers. We have a system that's pretty upside down. Opening it up to the concept of business and allowing people freedom to be creative outside of the norm allows businesses to grow. If businesses are an expression of creativity, then as soon as you regulate them, and especially over and over and over again regulate them, you destroy creativity in business, therefore you destroy business itself. When you destroy businesses, you create unemployment. And those that are still learning how to be creative more, oftentimes the younger folks, don't have jobs. Those who are trying to understand this whole principle of business don't have a model to follow. And the society becomes darker and darker at a faster and faster rate, moving oftentimes towards socialism and/or capitalism, and/or communism, and leaving the open nature of creativity totally, eventually. Not a good thing. This thing about healthcare that I just mentioned. Healthcare is both a business and it's a spiritual pursuit of helping to keep the wellness of people by helping them to understand that unwellness is caused by going against all the principles that we talk about on this show. In a fourth-rate world, people will learn that their wellness is first dependent upon how they live their life. That includes what they consume and eat, etc., but it goes far beyond that. It's how they serve others. It's how balanced they are between their spiritual and material side as far as how well they will be. The fourth rate is the true rate of healing, not the fifth, not any other. It's the ray that really heals. So our society will become the most well society. All the sicknesses we have will drop from view. Only the few who are tremendously dark and or selfish will suffer the consequences, and the rest will remain healthy for much longer periods of time. Life expectancy probably will exceed 120, and still people will be healthy for almost all those years. Yeah, they may eventually die, but when they do, they'll die with a smile on their face. I know, that was a little glib at the end there, but I've run out of time, and I'm running out of time. And I just want you to know that if you think that what I've said tonight sounds a little Pollyannish, it's not. If we all seek to be more well, and we don't let a government take that over because it's going to destroy all health care, because health care is an individual act, not a collective one, you need to realize, you need to see the foundation of what it means to be alive and to be responsible for your life instead of someone or something else doing it for you. That's what's so important about understanding this fourth-rate principle. It puts a balance back into our society that needs strongly to be put there. And if we don't find it soon, we could end up living in a kind of third-rate out-of-control nightmare. That would be a terrible, terrible way for me, at least, to end my life this time in this world, and for, I think, the rest of you as well. Well, we're out of time for right now, so I hope this show has made some difference for all of you. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.